Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday, 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you're listening to the Ooze with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hey, thanks for tuning in. This is T.C. Downey, and with me on the line is Avenger Satanus and Jason Sorrell. How are you guys doing today?
Good. Yep, doing good.
Doing good. Well, today's actually going to be a real interesting topic. We're revisiting something that we actually touched on in our very first show. And interestingly enough, I don't think that we could talk enough about this in two episodes, let alone 20. However, I'd like to see us cover some good ground. It was September 14th of 1911. George Ivanovich Gurdjieff decided to introduce to people his esoteric practice that he had acquired from his journeys throughout the East and beyond. And what he came to coin was that it was a fourth way of actually spiritually developing. And so that's what we're talking about today, is the fourth way. Anybody here have anything in particular they'd like to start with?
I came into my experience with the fourth way, with the work and everything through the Cult of Cthulhu, through Bender's urgings online that this was something worth looking into and this is something we should all should be considering. And as far as in my mind, Venger's kind of the my most immediate expert on the subject. So if he had anything he wanted to say, that'd be great.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I first, before joining as like a probationary or temporary member of the Temple of Set, I had never heard of Gurdjieff or Ouspensky or the Fourth Way, but they had several books of that kind in their reading list, and I was drawn to that, and I heard a lot of good things myself from other people, and so I started to explore it. And at first, I, like most people, I just thought it was kind of weird, and these people put so much emphasis on you know, the things that they were talking about, that, you know, man is asleep and, you know, we need to awaken and, you know, do different things, like not identify or express negative emotions and things like that. I thought, yeah, these people are kind of over the edge, but still they've got some valid things going on. But then the more I got into it, the more I realized that that they were right, and that, you know, man is not aware of himself 99% of the time, and you really gotta take the bull by the horns and actively make progress and do different exercises, you know, every day and things like that to sharpen yourself up. And yeah, so now I'm a big proponent of that. I think the fourth way is a very powerful tool or teaching, and I think it's a vital part of the Cthulhu cult as well.
When I first started looking into the fourth way myself, and I understood it to be this system of different practices that people could expose themselves to in a manner in which it would help elevate their consciousness. I guess what I immediately missed was the point that this philosophy was actually developed to be used in an everyday waking life, and rather than just in particular moments of reflection. And the idea is that you would do these certain practices and to build up your stamina in remaining fully conscious. And then eventually you would let go of these practices because you are now able to keep yourself completely conscious at all times.
Yeah. It starts with moments.
Go ahead.
And then you can build on it from there, you know, until you get to certain points, you know, in your life where you can use it and you can bring it up when it's necessary. It's impossible, even for myself and probably for people like Ouspensky and maybe even Gurdjieff, to be fully, objectively conscious all the time, 24/7. I don't know if anyone has that. You know, that much power and that much energy and concentration and focus to do that. But, you know, even if you can be conscious several moments throughout the day, I mean, that's great for a beginner. And, you know, if you can be conscious several hours in a day here and there, that's, you know, mind-blowing. And that's a lot more than the average person is capable of.
I think TC was hit a real point that what's interesting about the foreplay, about the work, is that it is a series of exercises. It doesn't require faith. It doesn't require a belief in anything necessarily. It's just these are exercises to develop a certain kind of awareness, just like you would do certain exercises to develop a certain muscle group or what have you. And these exercises are, you know, suggestions that you build on and try to achieve that endurance.
Right.
Yeah,
now,
yeah,
definitely.
Mm-hmm. What's even more fascinating about this spiritual guru, Gurdjieff, is that it's believed, at least pretty broadly, that he was a complete atheist. And that, you know, so he didn't actually have an external deity at all, and that's why the system was developed the way it was.
Right.
I think if he had a god, it would be truth. So that seems to be just a reoccurring theme, and not truth in the necessarily scientific sense, where it's proven to be a fact and it's accepted by, you know, the masses as this is the case. You know, anything, gravity, speed of light, whatever. But rather truth on an individual level, where let's say at the speed of light, for example, the only way that Gurdjieff would believe that the speed of light was actually what he was being quoted is if he actually measured it himself and came to that conclusion on his own. And that's what he was telling to everybody, even with the things that he was teaching. He was like, don't believe anything that I tell you. Check it out, and if it works for you, then it's your truth, not truth that I gave to you.
Right. Now,
I think, hang on a second, I just want to interject something.
Sure,
That's, I think he and others like Ouspensky saw the universe and each different little parts or octave as a living thing and part of this greater whole. And, you know, the earth and the moon and, you know, these weren't just objects, but they were sort of living entities. They had their own energy, their own life force. Maybe their own agenda and their own essence. They fulfilled a certain role throughout this giant process. And then humanity serves a role too. So in a way, I guess you could sort of slide that into, you know, a theology or, you know, a certain paradigm of maybe it's a little bit like the Force, you know, with Star Wars and George Lucas and all that. Like, you know, all these little pieces have their own life force, and they play their own parts in this giant game or experience, this existence. And then humanity has the potential to rise above its own station, and that's one of the rare gifts that human beings have. And then through the fourth way, I think we could fully, you know, realize our purpose and potential and awaken, and then the real fun can start, because then we'll have a lot more power and energy and control, and we'll have, you know, be able to fulfill a destiny, which is, we're right now, I think our role is just basic humanity, is just maybe to receive or give off energy to certain other entities or life forms or octaves or spheres throughout the universe, like the Earth or the Moon or, you know, the Sun, things like that.
Interesting. I'm curious. Now, Gurdjieff actually, he divided the human soul into two parts, the personality and the essence. I'm curious as to what your feeling is on that, Derek.
Okay. You mean Venger?
Oh, yeah, sorry.
That's okay. I answer to both. Well, yeah, the personality is what you acquire throughout your life, and essence is what you start with. So essence is the basic raw material. I guess that would be where the soul comes from, or it would be closer or more like the soul or the spirit of a person. I guess it would be more of a certain truth to the matter. If a person has a center, then I guess the essence would be that. Personality, human beings mimic other human beings a lot. We identify a lot. We pick up little debris from other people and just things that happen in life. A lot of a person's personality is probably conditioned through TV and other media that we receive. So obviously when you look at it like that, personality is the lesser part, and someone's essence would be the greater part. And it behooves someone to work on their essence and try to grow that, rather than developing the personality, which is just kind of plastic, artificial, for the most part, surface, and can't really get you anywhere. So spiritual development, I think, has to begin with essence, and to some degree it must eschew personality.
Right. Now, there's, I think his name was Banner. He was one of the students of Gurdjieff. I may have the name wrong, but one of the things that he stated, and I believe this is probably pretty true, is that the essence, once the personality starts to take a full-grown effect, the essence itself stops growing, and so most adults are walking around with the essence of a 12-year-old and the personality of a 50-year-old.
Right.
And so I guess what I was getting to is that spiritual development, it just kind of comes to a halt. And I think there possibly might be a few really good reasons for this. Now I'm not in any way against narcissism, but I think if it's excessive, that can definitely slow the halt of the growth of your spiritual essence.
By that, do you mean like concentrating on like just yourself and not enclosing yourself off from like other people or other things, or what do you mean by that?
I mean, deciding to begin defining yourself by the material possessions in which you own.
Yes.
I think more so than you know, isolating yourself and only focusing on yourself, because obviously, and this kind of goes into what we were talking about just before we came on the air, you know, obviously you want to try to constantly be, you know, working outward outside of yourself at the same time that you're working inside yourself. If that makes any sense, you know, changing the way that you affect the things that you come into contact with.
Well, I think the idea of personality and essence, I think to say that it's your essence stops, you know, most people are walking around with an essence of a 12-year-old. I think it'd be even safer to say that you might be walking around with an essence of a 5-year-old. I mean, if you look at toddlers, you know, prior to school, these children aren't engaged in any of the personality games that we engage in. They're not worried about necessarily the opinions of others. They don't care if they're liked or disliked. They're not really concerned with fitting in or conforming. They're more interested in learning about things and engaging in things and indulging their urges. When they get into a structured social system and start learning to mediate their urges and deny themselves certain things in order to conform, in order to receive that gold star, in order to be rewarded for whatever quirk they've denied themselves, that's when personality really starts to grow, because you put two people in a room together and each of them have a certain way of interacting, then you add a third person and that interaction changes. The way their personality shifts. So personality is really transitional. And in our society, we're very focused on how we interact with one another, how we deal with one another, to the point where we're willing to deny our own instinctual urges, our own internal opinions. You know, we're told that if we have a certain feeling about something, it's better not to voice it, because it might not be true, it might not be accurate, but if that's our first instinct, there are a lot of times when it might be best to act on that instinct rather than deny it. So that's my take on the personality essence.
And actually, it's a great take. We had a little bit of a technical difficulty, so I'm going to have to place the show on hold for just a second and get Derek back on the phone, okay?
Okay.
All right, so hang on. Hello?
I'm here.
Hello, Jason?
Yeah, I'm here.
Jason. Okay. Yeah. We have another caller on the air as well.
Cool.
That might have been me. I just tried to call in, and then I thought you were calling me, and I switched over.
Oh, yeah. That actually, let me look at the number. Yeah, that's you.
Okay.
608, right?
Yes, that's me.
Okay. Well, I'll just hang up on that then. All right, sorry, technical difficulty of some kind. I'm trying to think of how to briefly restate what you were saying while as Derek had fallen off the phone.
Well, just that we learn in our society through institutionalized groups to mediate our essence. We learn to give up our urges and deny ourselves certain instinctual responses in order to fit the PC correct way of behavior that gives us the gold star in society. So most of us are walking around with an essence of, I would even say, a 5-year-old, that preschool essence, and we've developed this huge personality that shifts every time we interact with a different person, every time we interact with a certain group. It's really transitional and really fluid, and we're so caught up in that personality shift and loss that, again, we're asleep. We have no idea, the majority of us, who we might actually be, what we might actually have as far as our potentials are concerned. So definitely, I agree with the whole personality essence clipping.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I would assume that you guys would agree that to some degree, society is kind of the enemy of essence, and society definitely promotes, personality growth, and to such a degree that it overtakes essence by a wide margin. Your personality is like this, gargantuan, monstrous sized thing, and then your essence is basically, the size of a pea. And that, like Jason was saying, it comes from socialization, and it comes just from groupthink and consensual reality, and following the rules and doing what everybody else does, and institutionalized thoughts, everything from schools and traditional churches, and all these things come into play, and basically we're fashioning living, breathing robots, and that's kind of how our society works, which is a shame, because then that's all you get is robots. You don't get real thinking, feeling, conscious beings. You just get these automatons that are supposed to buy, sell, and fight in these wars, that we start when we don't get what we want.
Which
is... Oh, go ahead.
Oh, please, Jason, go ahead.
I agree totally. The idea that it's a monster personality, at least that would be, if it were one cohesive personality, that would be awesome. But it's this fractured army of individual beings that you got your work guy, and the work guy you got is divided into the work guy that talks to the boss guy, and the work guy that talks to the coworker guy, the work guy that talks to the girl work guy or whatever. All these different fractured personalities continue to further and further divide and push you away from your essence. And when talking about people existing to feed energy into some entity, it is that society. We are all product. That the nation states no longer have a gold standard or a resource value. The only resources they have anymore are human beings, human lives. You go to school to learn to be a productive employee in the system. You function as part of that society within a certain parameters as an employee for 40 years, and then you do what you're supposed to do, going to Florida and retiring, and then dying off. They want you to procreate and make sure that you continue that cycle. And we need to, being socialized is not necessarily a bad thing. It's what we're being socialized for that's messed up.
Right. I think that begs the question, shouldn't we, as certain individuals that want to break away from that, drop out of society to a certain degree and start living our own lives the way we want to and not the way we've been conditioned or trained to, and not the way, maybe our parents or our other relatives or our friends or our boyfriend or girlfriend or other people in society or classmates, the people sitting across from you in church, the people, live your life for yourself. Don't live it for all those other people. Don't just toe the line and live according to their doctrine. Do your own thing. So I guess my question for you guys would be, how does an individual best do that or get started? How much might be too much? I mean, you can drop out to a certain degree or percentage and, live in a log cabin in Montana, I guess. Or, what are the other alternatives? You can do it by degrees, by a little bit at a time, or you can you know, how do you best drop out of society and just kind of live your own life?
Well, I'm gonna take this first because I know Jason's gonna have an extremely fascinating response to this because I've actually kind of talked with him about this in the past. My thoughts are that you can't totally drop out of society or with this conscious plane of reality without suffering some consequence to it. And so, you know, to me, the only option really is a total resistance, a complete rebellion against it. But well, we've seen that happen in the past, and that, you know, creates it creates some major difficulties for yourself. You better be willing to deal with hurricane after tsunami after earthquake.
Right, and then this resistance that you spoke about, you mean it as I guess keeping your own reality or pitting your will against the will of society?
That kind of resistance.
Okay. That's good. What are your thoughts, Jason?
Well, Ostensky talked about this process being like trying to break out of a prison. And if you think about it, if you were a prisoner and you tried to rush the fence, more likely you're going to be shot. And we see that in examples in our history. When we look at Ruby Ridge, you've got a group of people that just said, you know what, we're going to extract land, we're going to grow our own food, and we're out, we're done. We're not participating in society anymore. Our society doesn't allow that, doesn't tolerate that. So the backlash was, you know, ATF officers coming down on Ruby Ridge. And every group within our society, you know, whether it's modern Native Americans, whether it's whether they're crazy or not, the backlash has been very harsh and very swift. So I think it has to be a gradual process. And part of the process means using the system and trying to basically turn the system against itself, almost an Aikido mindset in dealing with certain, you know, the parameters of the system and trying to disconnect.
Subversive?
What's that?
Like, you mean like being subversive?
I still don't understand. What was that?
Being subversive, like using the control mechanisms that are already in place for your own purposes?
Yeah, but that would be absolutely. You want to reach a point where you're using the system, the parts of the system that are in place to help you advance, to help you disconnect from the things of society that exist to make sure that you still follow within the certain parameters. Take television, for instance. If you spend 3 hours a day watching television, watching sitcoms or whatever, well, then you're not thinking for yourself. You're being entertained. I just read something about Big Brother. The idea of Big Brother watching you is a falsehood. That in fact, Big Brother is instead distracting you and filling you with so much information and so much garbage that you don't have time to think for yourself, and your creativity goes away.
Right.
So, very subtle shifts in your behavior, very, very subtle shifts in the things you do and the way you interact with people, tuning out of the things that our society puts so much value on that really just exist as a distraction, and going and bowing out in small ways until you do start to achieve a level of true independence. Now, where this would lead to, eventually, it means that the folks that make that prison break, because Ostensky talks about doing it as a group, the folks that make that prison break just by their name from their own society. And their own society is governed by certain rules and certain behavior patterns. But it means reevaluating those behavior patterns and going, okay, is this beneficial for us as a species, or is this just producing a new product that achieves power for a few people or a nation state that doesn't really exist.
Right. Well, maybe we want to, you know, I also struggle with the idea of, you know, how much of the rest of the world or the rest of society can you help, or is it beneficial for you to help, and how much should you rely on just yourself and your own close-knit group and, you know, maybe close friends and family and the other people in that are trying to break out of prison with you, your own, like, prison escape group. Like, how much should you focus on that as opposed to, you know, getting the word out there and trying to promote change and fight the power for the masses at large?
I don't think the goal should be changing all of society. I think the goal should be achieving what you can as an individual and being an example. So it doesn't mean you shut out and close down and ignore society and don't tell anybody about what you're doing, because you, in order to be effective for yourself, you need that group that's going to help you escape, you need that group of people. You need to reach back and go, I can help you if you want out of this, and you can help me reinforce my getting out of this.
Right.
But it would just be a matter, I think, of the people that see what you're doing and want to be involved. Those are the people you reach back to. The people that choose to, well, that's their choice. That's the choice they made. And you have to let them have it. As long as you don't come into conflict, as long as those two social groups don't, you know, seriously clash, there shouldn't be any reason that the two can't coexist.
That makes sense. I am a big fan of starting small and doing what you can right now, as opposed to making these big grand plans and wanting to do these huge gestures and trying to, you know, trying to help Wisconsin awake or something, or, you know, like, or, you know, Austin, Texas, or, you know, do, you know, these big lofty ideas that ultimately, you know, probably won't work anyway, but it takes so much time and energy to do something on a large scale. It's just so much easier and probably more productive to work on an individual basis or a small group basis. And I think you can liken or mirror that with the many different eyes within a person. Like you were saying, Jason, there's, you know, the eye that wants to go out and do this, and then there's a different eye inside of you that wants to go do that. And really, if you can find a relatively small collection of these eyes that want to make progress and that actually want to work, well, then you have what you call in the fourth way a magnetic center. And then the work actually can start to begin inside you, and you can start to change and transform and develop in a new way and hopefully become more awake. And I think you can do that in the world too, by concentrating on yourself and the people that are around you that also want to make progress and help you, and you can help them. And then, you know, and then one thing leads to another. And that's what the Cthulhu Cult is all about as well. It's a fourth way group, as well as, you know, left hand path magical society, as well as a Lovecraftian religion.
I think that it's an absolute mistake to ever think that we can do things on a grand scale and have any kind of effect other than an explosion or an implosion. In fact, I think that it's more important that you kind of grasp that small group of people, you know, your prison break buddies, as it's been defined this show, and you know, work within them, you know, at building, you know, to a certain level and keeping a consistent momentum. And then what might be achievable later in the future, and actually you saying magnetic center kind of triggered this thought in my mind. There was this movie some time ago where they were drawn to the core of the earth because the core of the earth had stopped. And they couldn't just like do this one big mass explosion to make it start spinning again. They had to do this series of smaller explosions in a certain sequence and order to get it spinning again. And in my mind, I think that, you know, that can be done with reality. I mean, it's not that reality is just so shattered and so broken that, you know, it just needs to be completely and totally devastated and wiped away, but rather it needs a tune-up.
Yeah, that is truly a great analogy. A small series of precisely timed and located explosions or shocks can get things in motion, where one giant, you know, megaton explosion can't do the job or might do more harm than good. Also, if people want to call in and talk about the fourth way or just say hey or whatever, I got our number for the show written on my hand because I went back to charge my phone. 347-989-1371. So if you want to call into the Ooze and talk to Beast Zeno, Jason Sorrell, or myself, Andrew Satanis, then go ahead and do that.
Awesome. Jason, you still hanging out on there?
I'm still here.
I'm waiting.
What's that?
I'm just waiting for you to hit me with a ton of bricks, man. I know you pretty well, and I know there's something churning in there if you're quiet.
No, I was just thinking about how the idea of doing something grand, what could be more grand? You know, with all do you really need the accolades of society to achieve something grand? And what could be more grand than not only living a content life, but living a life of contentment with people around you who are also engaged in, you know, being actualized, living a content life. And then the idea of the small shocks. Gurdjieff's Law of Seven, I think, is
right.
Something he actually talked about, that, about how reality ebbs and flows, and that by using small, you know, carefully timed shocks to that system, you could achieve consistency. But as far as reality is concerned, I think reality is just fine the way it is. The problem is this artificial layer that we've created over reality that now governs the way the majority of us behave.
That is awesome. Yeah, I think you just said a lifetime's worth of stuff there. Also, I just wanted to quickly interject. What you were saying about consistency and the shocks is dead on. If you look at things in nature, like how they grow, things don't grow in a straight line. They usually go in like a curve because, after a while, like the ebb and flow of reality in the Law of Seven, things just naturally, you know, change or evolve or they grow in a natural way, which is basically curved. And what we want to do with spiritual development, we don't just want to curve and go back in ourselves and make some progress and then lose ground later. You know, take two steps forward, then take two steps back. What we want to do is progress in a straight line. And so periodically, if you give yourself these certain shocks, and basically self-remembering and realizing that you have to do these certain things, then you can grow in a straight line. And it's very unnatural, which is why it takes a lot of work and consistency, and it's difficult to even fathom originally or early on, but it's definitely possible, and that's kind of what we try to achieve, you know. There aren't a lot of sharp, straight angles that just come about in nature. But that's what we have to do with our own consciousness, is create these sharp lines and angles, and then that could fit into the whole Lovecraftian thing, too, and space-time, how that's curved, and what we want to do maybe to travel to other dimensions or other planes of existence or astral space is draw these straight lines and angles in our own mind and consciousness or our own magical reality to get us to these other places. It's kind of off topic, but I was on a tangent, so I just let it roll.
No, I don't think it's off topic at all. I think that people who are engaged in the work have to keep in mind that it's called the work for a reason. The idea of suffering being this this concept in it, that you are going to relapse, you are going to go off on weird tangents that have nothing to do with what it is you're trying to achieve, and that's going to happen. But the more you apply yourself, over time, those incidents will happen less and less, and you'll find yourself growing and continuing to advance on a more consistent and more level plane towards your goals. And when we talk about suffering, too, I just want to clarify that suffering isn't necessarily dealing with pain or dealing with emotional turmoil. Suffering just means taking yourself out of your comfort zone, whatever it is, and making sure that whatever it is you're doing, you're uncomfortable, because that's what stimulates growth. So just like with exercise, I mean, lifting a weight over and over and over again, there's nothing physically fun about that. You know, your body's going to hurt, but you're moving towards your goal, and it can be in itself, you can get pleasure from that exercise. So, and it's on every aspect, you know, mental, emotional, physical. The exercise itself is work, but it doesn't have to be it's pleasurable.
And another important thing, using that same analogy, if you go to the gym, you know, once, twice, three times or more a week, and let's say you're doing the bicep curls, it's pretty standard that everybody visualize. If you're lifting like 20-pound dumbbells, you know, for these bicep curls, and let's say you do two sets for, like, I don't know, 15 repetitions, like every single time, if you do it the exact same way, well, after a couple months, you're not going to see any more growth because, you know, your body adapts. Just like the mind, you know, your emotional world can adapt, you know, all your centers adapt, and so starts out being uncomfortable or new. What starts out as conscious suffering one day, you know, 2 months later or whatever length of time down the road, your body adapts and you adapt, and it's no longer new, it's no longer fresh. You're not growing, not changing anything. So what you have to do with exercise and with other things, you know, taking that leap to new territory, you got to change things up. You got to do things in a new way, a different way. You got to put yourself under the microscope, and you got to do a lot of more self-examination. You got to lift more weight. You got to put yourself in even further uncomfortable positions. You've got to challenge yourself, and you got to find new ways to do things. And vary it up, you know. Sometimes it's got to be random. Sometimes it's got to be progressive. And yeah, you can't just rely on, like, doing one new thing and, like, oh, you know. So sometimes for me, like, going to a new restaurant is, like, a big deal because, you know, sometimes just going to a new restaurant makes me uncomfortable just because I don't know it. And I don't know what I'm going to order. I don't know what it's going to be like when I get in there. So, you know, that's just kind of like a weird, irrational thing that's a part of me. But sometimes when I go, then I'm like, oh, okay, cool. But just because I went to a new restaurant, just and I look like I keep going there like once a week, you know, I'm not creating any new change in myself just because now this thing is familiar to me and I do it all the time. You got to put yourself out there, and you got to keep challenging yourself. You got to keep doing new stuff. Like in the movie Dune, you know, if you went to Arrakis, the desert planet, instead of the water world, you know, that's a big change. But if you stay on Arrakis your whole life, then you've lost those new experiences. You got to keep looking for them and keep going out there and keep doing it, making the change, and being active. So anyway, I think that's what you were saying, and I definitely agree.
I want to check out Ix.
Pardon me?
I said I want to check out Ix. It's a Dune thing.
Oh, okay.
Never mind.
The spice must flow. I figured that just yesterday.
All right. Guys, real quick, let's take a minute and just play a commercial break, and then we'll go into a more relaxed set of the show. So everybody hang on real quick here.
The Ooze is brought to you by the following. CultOfCthulhu.net. Awaken with the Cult of Cthulhu. CreativeOddityStudios.com. Making art a dirty word since 1998. Lulu.com/Satanus. Purchase publishings by Avenger Satanus. Artist, author, cult visionary. Find titles such as Cthulhu Cult, Libre AO, and the role-playing game Empire of Satanus. Lulu.com/CreativeOddities. Find publishings written by Jason Sorrell, artist, author, such as The Tattoo Apprentice, The Baphomet Codex, and The Devil's Due. FearTheBeast.com. Let the madness begin. Catch the dollies. A vigilant of vision. YouTube.com/HighPriestSatanus. Now back to our program.
Yeah,
awesome.
Yay, we're back.
Yes, we are. Something that struck in my mind while we were listening to this commercial break, and I thought maybe this is something that would be interesting to talk about a little bit during this last little bit. All three of us are of a satanic background, and I'm curious as to why you guys think that it is that we're attracted to this fourth wave philosophy.
I think that the focus on individualism is a strong part of it. I think that that's what the real appeal is, and it's taking an active role, whereas other religions, other philosophies, there's a lot of letting things go, a lot of just accepting or denying or what have you, and that typically doesn't happen in the work of fourth way.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that.
You think it's because of the individuality of it?
Yes.
Sorry, it just kind of rang into my head, you know, because it's such a big thing, and I mean, even in Jason's Baphomet Codex, you can see there's an underlying kind of understanding of the fourth wave philosophy written into it as well.
Really? Were you familiar with the fourth wave before you wrote the Baphomet Codex, Jason?
I had started reading the fourth wave when I started writing the Baphomet Codex, and I was really just there's so many people asking me what is Satanism. So many people going, what does it mean to you? And my answer has always been that it's an individual thing, that no one person's answer is going to be the right answer. And I just thought I'd go ahead and tell people what I thought, and you know, the things I would do if I were going to, you know, that I've done to come to this understanding. And reading The Fourth Way just kind of really put a framework around it. When I first read it, it was kind of like reading the Satanic Bible by LaVey was kind of like, that's something that I agree with. It's something that this defines it. And then reading The Fourth Way was another one of those moments where, like, okay, there's the structure for the thing that I had been thinking. So,
right. Exactly. It's like an aha moment, and it strikes a chord, and then it creates a resonance. I think throughout your being or throughout your philosophy or your paradigm, and then you're like, you know, this is something real. This is like an influence A that strikes at the core of you know, of what we're all searching for, you know, is this deeper truth. Of course, when people ask me what Satanism is, I say, well, just ask Jason King on YouTube, because he ought to know. Yeah,
that's excellent. All right, so now we're into the undiluted truth section of the show, and I want to thank you guys.
Booyah!
I think this this particular show was very productive.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of great stuff came out of it, and I'm very happy with the whole show. Yeah, that we have so far, but yeah, obviously there's a little bit more. I don't know what you guys want to talk about. What do you guys want to talk about?
Actually, I'm quite fascinated with a picture that Jason just did recently, and I was kind of wondering what the inspiration of it was, and I'm trying right now to get to the title of it, but it's the one with the green doorway.
The title's like, is now and now something completely different or something like that?
Yes, yes.
It's a picture of it's a little kid in a completely silhouetted by the light coming from his closet, and it's a monster in his closet, but instead of being afraid of the monster, the kid's actually summoned it. And I don't know what I was thinking. It was late at night, and I was frustrated with the stuff I was trying to draw. It wasn't working out, and it was just one of those quirky little things, and I had to run with it. So it was something completely different.
What would be the chances of getting a comic strip based off of the characters that are in that picture and the concept behind it?
The only problem with trying to do a comic strip is, like, if you're going for funny, whatever it is you're going for, it's really hard to do it on a consistent basis. I did a comic strip years ago, once a month, and it was just backbreaking trying to come up with something funny, some topic every month, and then drawing it out. And if I were to do some sort of comic strip, I'd want to take probably the next year, produce 12 strips, really do some ideas, and then put it out there one strip a month, you know, really slowly, you know, get it out there and see what happened with it. It'd be cool. I don't know. I'm sure that image that would inspire some ideas and could be interesting. But
where should we go if we want to see? I'm not at my computer right now, but if I wanted to see it a little bit later, like after the show is done, is that on your website? Or where could we find it?
If you go to www.creativeoddiesstudios.com, go to the main page and just read through all my crap about whatever I'm doing that month. And then there's a couple of dates. I think it was like the 6th that I did it, December 6th. And all it says is, basically says, and now for something completely different, and you click on the link that's right in that statement, and it takes you right to it.
Okay.
Excellent picture. Actually, also on the lines of artwork, Jason, did you get a chance to see Venture's new paintings?
I haven't. I haven't had a chance to see Venture's new paintings. I need to, like with the stuff that showed up on DeviantArt, when I saw that you had added a bunch of my stuff, I scrolled through your gallery again. I said, okay, I gotta go through and check out your stuff, and saw that one piece. I'm sure you've read my comment already.
I did.
I've been hyping it up, and I need to definitely check out Venture's new stuff. I went to the new website and have been to the old website, but I just didn't have time to go through the artwork.
The new site being Cthulhu-Cults.com, that one?
Yes.
Right, the new website. Yeah, that's new to me.
Okay. Yeah, no, it is new. It's only, Beast Zeno finished that he got most of it before my birthday, November 25th. So it's about 3 weeks old or something. And we've already got some decent content up there.
Yeah, I was. I did check out the Ooze Girls, the Green Slime Girls or whatever.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that for a lot of time.
We're gonna have a lot more of that. I'm gonna have. I am having this tentacle made, like a prosthetic, poseable, like very realistic, green tentacle made. And when I have that in my possession, then we're gonna do a lot more photos with naked and semi-naked girls and green slime, and it's gonna be good stuff. And we're gonna put them up on the website. But anyway, you were talking about the comparisons between the old site and the new site. What are you thinking? Do you like them both for different reasons, or do you like one over the other?
I like the new site. It definitely has a sharp look to it. Definitely seems to have more potential as far as media is concerned. But the old website has the advantage of, first of all, it's familiar. The other thing is being able to click on, getting through the different sections very quickly from the one page. And I'm sure the new site has that available to it, and I'm just not familiar with the walk through the process. But speaking of the Green Slime Girls, in connection with that piece of artwork that I did, I had thought about, and then seeing those girls, I had thought about a short video where it's you've got the whole fog machine and strobe lights in a closet, and all you see is that from the side. You don't actually see into the closet, and then tentacles coming out of the closet and going after a green slime girl, pulling the bed over to the closet, and just a short little 5-10 minute video, but still, that's where my mind went.
Yeah, I think we're gonna try stuff like that in the Touched by the Tentacle video or video series that Bizino and I are gonna produce this spring. I think things like that, more of an extended, lurid kind of sex and Lovecraft kind of homage. Yeah, definitely. That would be cool.
We are actually entering into those last couple of minutes where we need to get our thank yous out there. So, as always, I'll start off, and I want to thank you, Jason, for coming out and making this a show definitely worth people archiving. Maybe even people downloading it and putting it on their MP3 player. There's a lot of stuff that was covered in there, a lot of ways that you could go, just based off of every little thing that we talked about. As always, you're extremely comprehensive and quite precise. So thank you so much for joining us again. Benjamin, as always, thank you, man, because without you, this whole thing wouldn't be possible.
Well, you're welcome. No problem.
And that's it for my thank yous.
Okay. Thank both of you guys. And, it's a great show. I think it's one of the best shows we've done in a while. And, we've touched on some really great stuff. I don't know if you guys do you guys ever see or have you read The Onion? Like a fake, funny, humorous, like newspaper. The Onion.
The Onion, absolutely.
Okay. We speak about comic books just a few minutes ago, and they've got this comic section called Red Meat, and it's basically just these three panels that they show over and over, but there's like new dialogue. That might be like a quick and easy, comic book style. We can incorporate sometime. Maybe the three of us or something. I don't know. That's an idea. But great show, everybody. And do you want to say anything to end it off, Jason?
Thanks for you guys having me on the show. I always enjoy it when I can make time to get on the show, and love the conversations. It's always a topic that's interesting to me that we talk about, and always gets the gears turning in my head. And I find that I continuously when I listen to shows. So thanks to you guys again for producing consistently interesting and entertaining shows. I really dig it. I really dig the new project. So kudos.
Awesome. Well,
I guess that's it.
Yeah, we'll talk to everybody next week.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily reflect those held by Venture or Beast or any institution associated with us. The Ooze does not condone any illegal or unethical acts. If you have been offended during the production of the show, we're sorry, but as the old expression goes, tough luck. Thank you, and see you next week.